Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
It does show the sort of strain that the market is under this winter.
It's very rare to hear the chief economist of the Bank of England being so frank about Brexit.
I think that what's more problematic for policy in the UK is following these basics so that people make decisions on the basis of the full picture.
Stephen, I would like to have a small rant.
Oh, just a small one. That's a relief.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. Ewan, congratulations on making it to work today. A bit of a challenge for lots of people, as most trains in and around London are not running. The Underground luckily is, so we might have a chance of getting home later as well. But this is going to be one of the big topics, of course, at today's PMQs. It's the TUC day of action, up to 500,000 workers taking part, teachers, university lecturers, train drivers, rail workers, border officials and civil servants. But we're here. Fear not.
We are here. We are here. Not striking. Yeah, we'll be speaking to the TUC's Kevin Rowan a little bit later in the programme, asking whether he thinks he's actually going to achieve much with this coordinated day of strike action. Interesting quote of one Tory MP by Politico saying that the strikes haven't dealt that much political damage to the government so far, but schools shutting will be the first time that a lot of people feel the impact. And I think this is key, isn't it? Is that lots of people don't use the trains. We forget that sometimes living in London. Is that trains are a minority way of getting to work. Most people drive to work. And the NHS strikes, shocking as they are, of course, most people, thank goodness, are healthy. So they don't need an ambulance every day. So a lot of these strikes, I think, haven't touched people on a daily basis. But millions of people, of course, have kids. And there's going to be a problem for them if they can't go to school.
Yeah, certainly. Actually, Bloomberg Economics has been looking to try to estimate the cost of the strikes in the last quarter of last year. So the last 3 months of 2022. £1.5 billion is the cost that our colleague Dan Hansen has put on it. He's our senior UK economist at Bloomberg. So the impact of the economy, it's a big number. It's not huge in the overall context, though, of the UK economy.
Yeah, 0.2% of GDP. Of course, that, as you say, is not a huge amount in context. But when the economy is already teetering on the edge of recession, well, that could just sort of knock us over. Although that forecast from the IMF yesterday was pretty gloomy, wasn't it? Starmer is just about to stand up, I believe.
In his words about the First Minister of Wales and the sad loss of his wife, everybody, I think, knows just how close they were. And I know that he's absolutely devastated by her loss at the weekend. Mr. Speaker, when the Prime Minister briefly emerged from his hibernation at the weekend, he raised more questions than answers. So in the interests of integrity and accountability, can he set the record straight? Did his now former chair tell government officials that he was under investigation by the taxman before or after the Prime Minister appointed him?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I appointed the independent adviser to investigate this matter fully. He has set out his findings in detail over the weekend, and on receipt of those findings, I took action, and I'd refer the honourable gentleman to the independent adviser's report.
Oh, come on. Anyone picking up a newspaper in July last year would have known that HMRC and the National Crime Agency were investigating months before he appointed him. Yeah, yeah. Mr Speaker, The Independent, 6th of July, new Chancellor's finances secretly investigated by the National Crime Agency. The Observer, 3 days later, 9th of July, revealed officials raised flag over tax affairs before he was appointed Chancellor. The Financial Times, the next day, 10th of July, pressure bills to explain his finances. Is he saying his officials hid this information from him, or was he just too incurious to ask any questions?
Mr Speaker, as I've said before at the dispatch box, the usual appointments process was followed with respect to the Minister without portfolio. No issues were raised with me at the time of his appointment, but as the independent adviser's report makes clear, there was a serious breach of the ministerial code, and that's why I took decisive action on receipt of that report.
So, in relation to his former chair, his defence is, nobody told me, I didn't know, I didn't ask any questions. Is the Prime Minister now also going to claim that he was the...
Order, Prime Minister. Mr Gullis, we heard enough last week. I can't hear what you're saying. I might not be able to hear what you're saying, but I can certainly see your mouth moving. It'll be moving outside if it continues. Prime Minister.
So, for his former chair, nobody told me, I didn't know, I didn't ask any questions. Is the Prime Minister now also going to claim that he's the only person completely unaware of serious allegations of bullying against the Deputy Prime Minister before he appointed him?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman asked these questions about what was known, and I followed due process. I appointed an independent adviser as soon as I was made aware of new information. The independent adviser has conducted this process. But if he is so concerned about what people are saying and is so concerned about behaviour in public life, then recently one of his own MPs was forced to speak out because being in his party had reminded her of being in an abusive relationship. And then his own office was caught undermining her. He ought to be supporting her and her colleagues, but if he can't be trusted to stand up for the women in his party, he can't be trusted to stand up for Britain.
Mr Speaker, at the last count, the Deputy Prime Minister was facing 24 separate allegations of bullying. According to recent reports, some of the complainants were physically sick. One says they were left suicidal. How would he feel if one of his friends or relatives was being forced to work for a bully simply because the man at the top was too weak to do anything about it?
Mr Speaker, I noticed he didn't say anything about why one of his own MPs describes being in his own party. And Mr Nipper, when I was made aware of formal complaints, I instructed a leading independent KC to conduct an investigation because I take action when these things happen. But what did he say at the weekend? He said at the weekend that hate had been allowed to spread unchallenged in the Labour Party under his predecessor. He was speaking as if he wasn't even there. But he was sitting right next to him, supporting him for 4 long years, not challenging. And it is typical of him, Mr Speaker, declining to lead, sitting on the fence, carping from the sidelines, and never standing up for a principle that matters.
I want to hear both sides, and I'm not going to be interrupted by either side. And I'm particularly looking for people who want to continue this, because we will sort it out today. Keir Starmer.
Speaker, he's just like one of his predecessors who treated questions about conduct as something to brush off, who thought that ducking responsibility was a perfectly reasonable response for a Prime Minister. At least in fairness, his predecessor didn't go around pretending he was a paragon of integrity and accountability. But on that subject, was it a coincidence that the two people who arranged an £800,000 line of credit for the former Prime Minister were both shortlisted for plum jobs at the BBC and the British Council?
Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, as we addressed previously, the appointments process for the BBC chairman is rigorous, it's transparent, it's set out in a public code of conduct, and indeed, was fully supported not just by an expert panel members, but also by the cross-party DCMS Select Committee, including where Labour members described the appointment as impressive. But Mr Speaker, back this week in terms of what is actually happening to the people of this country, he voted this week with the unions to oppose minimum safety levels. He voted with Just Stop Oil to water down the public order bill. And what do the unions and Just Stop Oil have in common? They bankroll him and his party, Mr Speaker. So while he sides with extremist protesters and union bosses, we stand up for hard-working Britons and school children.
After 13 years in power, trying to blame the Labour Party for his failure to sort out the strikes is rank pathetic. The Tory Party's addiction to sleaze and scandal has done huge damage to this country, and the cost to the public keeps adding up. We've got a justice system letting murderers walk the streets, heart attack victims waiting hours for an ambulance, an economy that's shrinking quicker than his leadership. And even I couldn't quite believe it when I saw that his government is expecting taxpayers to pay the legal fees for the member for Uxbridge defending himself over his lockdown rule breaking. £250,000. Surely even this Prime Minister can put his foot down, stand up to his old boss and tell him he made the mess, he can pick up the bill.
Mr Speaker, he can't stand up to his union bosses. He can't stand up for Britain's school children today. And he can't stand up for the women in his party, Mr Speaker. We're getting on, we're halving inflation, we're growing the economy, we're reducing debt, we're cutting waiting lists, and we're stopping the boat. While he can't even figure out what he believes in, we'll keep delivering for Britain.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. Would my right honourable friend agree with me that the integrated care boards must prioritise more access to new GP services, especially in places like South Derbyshire, where new housing estates are being built at the fastest rate in England, and in particular on the new brownfield development of Drakelow?
Well, Mr Speaker, the government is committed to increasing the number of doctors in general practice, and last year saw the highest ever number of doctors accept a GP training place. The BMAR consulted each year on the funding of GP services, and my honourable friend will know that the NHS has a statutory duty to ensure sufficient medical services, including general practice, in each local area.
Leader of the SNP, Stephen Flynn.
Mr Speaker, I'd like to pass on my condolences and indeed those of my party to the First Minister of Wales and also to the family, friends and colleagues of firefighter Barry Martin, who so sadly lost his life following the blaze in Edinburgh just last week. Mr Speaker, we've just marked the 3-year anniversary of Brexit and we've learned... They'll not be cheering in a moment, Mr Speaker. Because we have learned three things. The UK's trade deficit has grown. Yep. The economy is being hit to the tune of £100 billion each year. And of course, we know that the UK's economy is expected to be the worst performing of all advanced nations. Does the Prime Minister still believe that the UK can afford not to be in the European Union?
Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if you actually look at it, since Brexit, the UK has grown exactly the same as Germany has, Mr. Speaker. But not only that, we are taking advantage of Brexit to deliver for the people across the UK, whether it's the fishing and farming communities of Scotland, whether it's through the two new free ports that we've just announced. But, Mr. Speaker, the difference between his party and ours is that we respect referendums.
Okay, that was the Prime Minister Rishi Sunak there answering questions in Parliament. Interesting to hear Stephen Flynn from the SNP there reference the Bloomberg Economics study published yesterday showing that cost of Brexit of £100 billion, I should say, to the UK economy every year. So interesting to hear both the question and the response there on that issue. Ewan, overall, I mean, Keir Starmer spent a lot of his time talking about personalities within the Conservative Party and various either allegations or investigations taking place around them. And I felt like not very much time talking about strikes.
Yeah, I mean, strikes, he didn't really ask about strikes at all, did he? He sort of referenced it obliquely. But yeah, he wanted to really stick on what I guess he would call a Tory sleaze, not only referencing Nadeem Zahawi, which presumably the Prime Minister hoped had gone away with his sacking, but also Dominic Raab, the allegations of bullying, and even mentioning the appointment of the BBC chairman and the Boris Johnson kerfuffle. So it seems that he was very keen to go on that. It does seem to me that the two men are increasingly kind of talking across each other. I felt today that there wasn't much interaction. Starmer would ask one thing and Sunak would trot out his point on another thing. It wasn't really a discussion, was it?
It felt like so many interviews that we do on this programme where you feel like you ask a question and the person hasn't heard it at the end. So that's PMQs. We've heard from Rishi Sunak. Bloomberg, though, has also been speaking to unions on the picket lines today on the TUC's Day of Action. Let's start with the National Education Union General Secretary, Kevin Courtney. He says the government's argument on inflation doesn't stack up.
No price has to go up because a teacher gets a pay rise. There's no direct impact on inflation. There are no prices linked to teacher salaries. And we don't accept that argument. And there are many economists, including in the Financial Times, Martin Wolf in the Financial Times, saying this is a bogus argument that these pays, the current inflation spike we've got is nothing to do with wages. And there are the only price they seem to want to control is the price of our labour.
Well, the train drivers are no more optimistic than the teachers. ASLEF General, Assistant General Secretary Simon Weller says that the government's negotiating stance has made things worse.
We've gone backwards. We're now in a worse place than we were than 6 months ago.
Well, the head of the PCS, the largest trade union of civil servants, Mark Servatka, says a divide and conquer approach from ministers won't work.
Well, it's what they've done in the past. But they'll struggle, I think, to get away with that this time because they've set their store on not giving anything to anyone. And I think the minute they decide to treat one group of workers differently, I think the effect that will have is that others will say, well, we're going to fight on then because we all deserve to be treated properly.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new. to build something better. To know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
So all these different workers pushing for more pay. We wanted to talk to a key group in all of this, the Trades Union Congress. Well, we caught up with the TUC's Head of Organising Services and Learning, Kevin Rowan. We asked him why they've organised this day of action.
There's two issues, really. One, we'd like the government to do more to settle the current disputes that are hampering delivery of public services and really impacting on public service workers. We want them to get around the table and negotiate a fair pay deal that I think most people understand our teachers, nurses, other public servants deserve, but also to ask them to think again about their minimum service levels legislation, which is essentially a strike ban in all but name. We think the government have got that wrong. We think the public don't believe that the government have got it right, and we're asking them to think again. But whether we make any progress or not, it's difficult because the government have been reluctant to really speak to us about any of these things.
Now, Kevin, for some, it's the first day of strikes, teachers, for instance, but others, the rail workers, for instance, have been out for months. How do you prevent strike fatigue?
Well, I think, obviously, the longer the strikes go on, the more difficult it is for those that are taking strike to kind of stay, to keep the faith, if you like, to try and win the dispute. But I think the strength of feeling is so strong right across the economy, everything from rail to teachers, to other workers in the private sector, other workers in the public services. The strength of feeling is so high about the challenges of the cost of living crisis that unless they see movement, they don't feel that they've got any other option but to stand up and kind of push back against the experiences that they're having. So we're not seeing workers at the moment get, if you like, tired or fatigued about this. They're just increasingly determined that they're going to try and persuade the government or their employers to try and move on this. I think we've not seen this strength of feeling for some considerable years. Workers are genuinely angry and frustrated, genuinely desperate about the situation that they're facing. And the more that we can kind of, I guess, show solidarity to those workers, the more that they can get the messages of support from public and from other trade unions there, the longer they're able to kind of maintain that pressure on government and on their employers.
So does that mean that people should be prepared for more days like today, where we'll see strikes across all sorts of different sectors?
Well, I'm certainly seeing a determination and a commitment from working people to kind of get a better solution in a way that I haven't seen for a number of years. I think workers are genuinely really frustrated and angry and really disappointed, actually, that their employers or the government aren't kind of listening to their concerns and responding. So unless we do see a change from government in the public sector or from employers in the private sector, then I think it is inevitable that we will see more strike action. Obviously, we've seen the FBU ballot announcement this week. We're seeing other unions balloting. We're seeing parts of the public sector that didn't meet the threshold re-balloting. So I think rather than seeing, a kind of waning in support for action, we're seeing a hardening of union positions. And the government need to recognise this, I think, and come around the table in good faith to try and resolve the disputes.
What does good faith mean to you? What would prevent more strike action?
Well, I think people have been pretty clear. They need to see a different offer on the table in terms of pay, both for this year and moving into the kind of pay rounds for the year ahead. Now, I think Jeremy Hunt, as Chancellor, said he will meet the unions. He said that in the Select Committee. He hasn't done that. So that for me, is not an indication of good faith. I think the government needs to come to the table with a recognition that public sector workers have been enduring below inflation pay rises for years and years. You can just about get away with that when inflation's at 1%. You can't get away with that when inflation's over 10%. And the government needs to come with a better offer. They need to find some money for these workers, and they need to kind of put that on the table so that we can move on.
Kevin, on that question, the government's going to borrow about £180 billion this year. That's about £6,000 for every household in the country. Do you honestly think there's a good chance of a substantial pay rise in the public sector?
Well, I think there's a chance for movement in pay in the public sector. You know, there is always a solution to be found. There's always common ground that both parties can land on, but it does take both parties to come to the table with good faith. Now, the government are making choices on the way in which they're taxing the economy. You know, they could get a better income from a windfall tax on the energy companies. They could tax wealth and profit in a different way than they are doing. I mean, the fact is, share dividends are rising three times faster than wages and are not taxed at the same rate as wages. So there are choices that the government could make which would give them some wiggle room, really, to find a solution. But we're not seeing any will for the government to do that. And I think that's disingenuous. That's a problem, if you like, as the government says. On the one hand, they're negotiating. On the other hand, these negotiations are effectively ministers telling unions that there's no more money in the pot when actually there could be more money in the pot.
Do you worry that the government will take a divide and conquer strategy when it comes to the various unions and their pay claims? Will teachers and nurses get their pay settlement as a priority over others?
Well, I mean, it's hard to understand that the government's got any strategic approach to this at the minute. At the moment, the conversations are very much one-sided with very little kind of actual negotiation. So it's hard to detect a strategy other than where we're going to demonstrate how tough we are and we're going to make things harder in the future for unions to take industrial action. Whether they end up offering one sector of the economy more money or not, it's hard to see that at the minute because they're getting stonewalled right across government departments. But the fact is that the ball is in the government's part. They can resolve these disputes by coming to the table in good faith, by offering more money on the table to workers who I think everybody in the public recognises they deserve a fair pay rise. Everybody in the public recognises how hard they work and the service that they're bringing, how under pressure they are. The government's got to respond to that. At the moment, this kind of stonewalling and playing the hardball, it isn't going down well with anybody, and it isn't a route to solutions here.
So that was the TUC's Kevin Rowan speaking to us a little bit earlier as well. So today's day of strike action going ahead. Of course, it's also a protest against the minimum services bill that the government has put forward. So that is something that TUC is handing in a petition outside Parliament later on today as well. Looking ahead towards, of course, we have more train strikes coming this week. There's the nurses' strike and ambulance workers' strikes next week as well. So this issue set to rumble on. Very interesting to hear the perspective there from Kevin Rowan of the TUC on this, the worst day in more than a decade for strikes in the UK, almost 500,000 workers across a variety of sectors on strike. The business continues in the House of Commons later today. We'll be hearing from, they'll be discussing more about the UK Infrastructure Bank. There'll also be a debate on the state pension age due later on as well. Outside of the chamber of the House of Commons, though, there'll also be a dinner to mark 100 years of the Conservative Party's 1922 committee with MPs attending that. Rishi Sunak is also due to speak at that as well. And the former Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaking at an Atlantic Council event in Washington. He'll be talking about the importance of Western unity and support for Ukraine and what more can be done to support them as well. Also, in case you've missed it, tomorrow's Rishi Sunak's 100 days in office. Good for him. He's made it twice as long as Liz Truss. That's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe. Give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you usually listen. This episode was produced by James Wilcock. Marufal Hussein was on sound. Special thanks to Eamon Farhat for his reporting and speaking to some of the union bosses that we heard from a little bit earlier in the programme. We will have more, of course, on all of these stories on Bloomberg UK Politics tomorrow. Keep an eye out, too, for any news that might come around Brexit. Stay with us. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Do you love Elon Musk? Do you hate Elon Musk? Do you have no idea what to think about Elon Musk? Then we have just the show for you.
He's become even more larger than life.
Buying Twitter doesn't get us closer to Mars.
They are like really close to the edge of like everything falling apart.
Like, oh, Elon, I volunteer, put a chip in my brain.
Each week on this podcast, we'll break down, analyze, and debate the most important stories on Musk and his empire.
It's all one big universe. You just work for Elon Inc.
From Bloomberg Businessweek, this is Elon Inc. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.